But these were people with, I suppose, schizotypal, narcissistic, psychotic personalities. Empire.
Welcome to the Optical Atlas Show. I'm Jeff Kuykendall. Our theme song, which you just heard, is by The Apples in Stereo, and this episode is going to be all about The Apples, featuring an interview with Apples frontman Robert Schneider conducted last December. The occasion is the release of their new CD, Electronic Projects for Musicians, released April 1st on Yep Rock and Simeon Records. It's a collection of rarities, outtakes, and B-sides that The Apples produced between 1995 and 2006, even including The Apples in Stereo theme song, written for the band's website, and Stephen Stephen, a loving homage to Stephen Colbert, which Schneider performed on The Colbert Report. A few months back, Optical Atlas and the Apples in Stereo mailing list asked for your questions for Robert Schneider on the subject of electronic projects for musicians, either the new album or electronic projects of your own. And in this episode of the Optical Atlas Show, I take the questions to Mr. Schneider for some actually incredibly in-depth answers. We'll also play a couple of tracks from the new album. Let's get started.
I have a collection of questions here from many different sources.
Okay, cool. Very good.
Let's see here. This one is from Alex, and he wants to know about the dream song that you were going to originally put on Tone Soul Evolution.
Oh, yeah.
And that you're redoing. He just wanted to know why it didn't make it onto the record originally and what you're going to do to make it more of a modern Apple song.
Well, basically, the song was completely finished for Tone Soul Evolution. We had recorded it, and it was time we were mixing all the songs, and we were crunched for time in the studio. And on that song, it was completely finished, except for that it needed like a synthesizer. It had synthesizers on it, but it needed one more, and I couldn't get the right sound, and it was frustrating. And also, I wanted to have a guitar solo on it, and the guitar solo, God, it was the best guitar solo I've ever played in my life. I swear to God. And so I couldn't get the right sound on it. All the guitar sound never was the sound that it needed, a certain kind of soaring guitar sound of some sort, which I only vaguely remember now, but I do remember that it needed it. And I wasn't able to get it, and so I never, even though I set up and played over and over the guitar tracks, I ended up erasing it and never using it. And so because I couldn't get the right synthesizer sound and the right, I was looking for the most perfectly psychedelic, kind of bubbling, gurgling, sort of, while at the same time kind of sweeping synthesizer sound, and I couldn't pull it off in time. And we were recording at Studio 45 in Hartford, Connecticut with Mike Deming, which is where we recorded that album, and it was just, you know, we were just, like I said, we were running out of time. And so he was mixing the song, and I basically was gonna, we had the song mixed, it was up and mixed, and I had to put in the guitar and the synth, but we finished. And I didn't, I couldn't get them to happen in time, so we just ended up, like, just forgetting the mix and moving on to the next song. And I figured I would come back, but I never did. And so,
Did you re-record for this one, then? Did you re-record any bits of it, then?
Well, so what I did was, I had the 24-track tape forever, the 2-inch tape, and when I went to mix the Marbles album with Mark Lynette, I had him transfer some of these songs off of, so I have a few other songs from those sessions that aren't as complete from Tone Soul, but like I had him transfer them into like Pro Tools, and well, basically what I did was I added some synthesizers to get the effect that I had wanted, but I couldn't remember the guitar solo and I couldn't find the song on any like old tapes. I didn't look very hard, I'll admit, but I couldn't find it on any tapes or shows or anything that I had from that time.
Mm-hmm.
And like the songs, we used to play it all the time. And so I couldn't remember even like anything about the guitar solo, which was like the greatest guitar solo I had ever played, I swear to God. So I ended up just kind of like, I did like a orchestral kind of mellotron section in the middle of the song. And like added some synthesizers and think I might have added a guitar, and I'm not sure if I did, though. I think that the I didn't add a guitar. I just doubled one that was already on there. And so basically, I just added a few parts, but it's essentially the same. It's the original recording.
Did you do all that in the last year?
Updated. I just filled in the parts that it needed.
Oh, okay. Did you do all that in the last year then?
I did it about a year ago.
Oh, okay. So.
And I just finished it really about about a month ago.
Soul Evolution, is that kind of like your major label record?
At the time that we were doing it, it wasn't, because we were signed to Spin Art, and they had put in our first album, and they put out Science Fair, and Sire didn't pick it up until after it came out.
Mm-hmm.
It was like reissued on Sire about 3 months after it originally came out. And at the time we didn't know it was a major label record. We recorded at Studio 45 because he had recorded the Lilies album, Better Can't Make Your Life Better.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Deming is producer and engineer, and he's a great engineer. I really wanted to get a more hi-fi sound than I could get in my own studio, because I was just learning how to I guess it was. It did come out on Sire, but I wouldn't say it was our major label record. And at the time that we were recording it, it wasn't as we were just trying to make a really good record for SpinArt. They ended up licensing it to Sire later, and I think actually the license from Sire comes back to us later this year, so it'll probably be re-released.
Okay, is that a
all of our records? All of our records come back. The rights come back later this year, including the EPs that we did for SpinArt. Like, I would have liked for the material from the EPs to have appeared on this electronic project for musicians' records.
Mm-hmm.
But the license is, SpinArt still has the license on those songs. Plus, there are a bunch of other songs, like songs that we did for New Magnetic Wonder, and a couple of others that are floating around that still could be compiled, but that weren't, they didn't fit into the time frame, kind of like the era of electronic projects.
Oh, okay, so it doesn't have, like, Helium or any of those?
Yeah, it doesn't have that stuff on it.
Okay.
And, I felt like it was outside of, electronic projects for musicians covers a certain era. I guess it's kind of our era that we were on SpinArt for the most part.
Okay.
So not entirely. And but it's stuff that they didn't put out. It was the era that was simultaneous with all of the records that came out, I guess, before New Magnetic Wonder. And so, you know, while we have, when we, you know, we'll record an album every so often, but in between we're always recording 7-inches and songs, and just songs for fun, or like for some given purpose, or for like, there's always leftover songs from the albums for, like, say, release in Japan or something like that.
Yeah.
Record 2 extra songs for Japan. Maybe record an extra song for the UK or something to put on the bonus track, or for B-side, usually for, like, the single for the album or whatever.
Yeah, I always hated that there'd be one extra song that the Japanese would get, that everyone else would just have to wait for one super collector to get and then get it from him or something.
Yeah. I mean, but, like, the thing is, like, in Japan, CDs, Japanese CDs are, like, $30.
Mm-hmm.
And CDs from the U.S. are the same price they are here, so they're, like, $17.
Right.
They make the Japanese versions much more deluxe. That's why they're such good collector's items, though.
Right.
They make them much more deluxe than the American version to give Japanese record buyers a reason to buy them. And so they really are. They will be more special. And really, I mean, you go to a little... I go to trouble to try to make it more special. Not to make it more special. It, usually the thing is the Japanese release doesn't have to be turned in until after you turn in the U.S. release.
Yeah.
So, like, say, maybe a month or two later. And so you have a little time after you've already turned the record in to polish up some of the other songs, or to think about some new ideas for the packaging or something like that. So, like, it's kind of cool in a way because you get, it's like the second chance to just add a little extra to your record.
And but you kind of did that with Velocity of Sound, too, by giving, like, everyone a bonus track.
Yeah, for Velocity of Sound, we had bonus tracks for all territories. We had a song, and we had two different mixes of a song, they were quite different, that we used for the U.S. and the U.K., and that was She Telling Lies.
Yeah.
And then, I wonder if that's on this record. Oh, it's not on this record because it was under the license to SpinArt, so that's the type of song that would be on the next compilation.
Oh, okay.
That was kind of directly released by SpinArt.
Are you ever going to compile all the different remixes of that? I think there were 3 different remixes, right?
Yeah, I think either 2 or 3. I didn't think about it. I guess maybe it'd be good to put them on the same record.
Yeah.
We have other remixes, too. Like, we have some remixes that were made by Rich Costi, who's an amazing producer. But, like, Tidal Wave and... I think it was, like, Tidal Wave and Lucky Charm, and maybe one other song from Funzik Noisemaker.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a couple other kind of, like, radio mixes made. You know, because, like, I've always mixed the records for the most part, but, like, in this case, we, like, say, like, went to a hot shit guy that we knew, and, like, had him mix it for Sire. I think we had a radio mix of Seems So. I can't remember. I think I did the radio mix for Seems So, and I think maybe that's why it wasn't a big hit.
All right, I'm going to go to the next question.
Okay.
Let's see, Janet.
I'm terrible at answering questions.
No, you're doing great.
I'm sorry. You guide me if you need me to. Did I answer his question?
I'm used to doing email interviews, so I'm new at this very much so.
Okay, cool.
This is Janet. She's saying, She notes that at various points in your career you choose an eclectic mix of both extremely polished and produced songs and intermix them with lo-fi tracks. So I think she's talking about, like, velocity of sound is very kind of lo-fi, like more like...
Catching the record sound. Buds on either side of it.
Yeah, but she's saying sometimes you kind of intermix them, and she wants to know how you decide what feels right for each track, and how do those decisions affect future recordings?
That's a good question.
I mean, I know, like, with Velocity of Sound, the whole album, it had that kind of ethic that it was going to be, like, more loud and more kind of fuzzy.
Yeah. But then on, like, New Magnetic, and then, like, the Ulysses record was recorded in mono, like, live, but then you, and with, like, with one microphone, but then Ulysses, then the new Magnetic Wonder has a lot of different interspersed kinds of sound qualities and stuff, and so that's a good question. You know, I guess there's two different things that are kind of influencing that. One is that generally once I've worked really hard on something and kind of gotten it into this perfect form that was kind of like what I had envisioned, I don't want to work on that same form anymore, and so like I'll swing the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so like and so that's like one that's one thing. So like on Fungic Noisemaker, we tried to go for a really big production in contrast to the four-track recordings we had done before, where we were trying to go for a big production, but we were greatly limited by the number of tracks. And, like, even though Fungic Noisemaker isn't very hi-fi, but then we went to the studio, because Fungic Noisemaker, I didn't feel like it was hi-fi enough. We went to a studio to record the second record, Tone Soul Evolution, and... But at the same time, on Tone Soul Evolution, we tried to make it a little more stripped-down sounding, like more sparse or more... It isn't that sparse, though, when I listen to it. I don't know what I was thinking. It's actually more elaborate. For some reason, I thought I was making a more sparse album. Every album that we've ever made, I've always tried to make it more sparse than the one before. Like, Discovery of the World of the Southern Moon was supposed to be more sparse than Tone Soul Evolution, but it's way more elaborate.
That didn't work, yeah.
And then, like, so the new record, though, New Magnetic Wonder, I didn't try to make more sparse. I was just like, what the hell? I'm just going to go ahead and let it. It's not going to be sparse. But like, okay. The question of the sound quality. Well, sometimes there is for every song. A lot of times it really just has to do with like how the song germinates. A lot of times you just record a song quickly. You're hanging out with your friends and you just set up the microphone and go. And those kinds of songs, you really don't want to polish it up. You know, if you polish it up, then it sounds like a sloppy polished song. That were more progressive and that we kind of felt were more like the next album, like should be, and we wanted it to make it super polished. But I don't know, you know, just think like it was we stopped playing live for a while, and then at the time, I don't know, we've just kept planning on getting together and recording these songs, and I think that it's going to happen at some point.
Yeah.
Songs that were left over, plus a couple of Ulysses-ish, like, in the style. It's a certain kind of style of song. And, like, we have a couple of other newer songs since the time we recorded the record that have come up, too, that I've kind of designated to the future Ulysses album whenever we record it.
To give you an idea of the Ulysses live mono sound, here's a track from the first Ulysses record, 010, released in 2004. It's called Falcon.
Desperation is so strange, it's so strange. You shadow of a falcon passing by in the starlight, in the darkened sky. You stand in the shadow of a falcon passing by.
Yeah, you went from Ulysses right into recording the new Apples in Stereo album, which is kind of the polar opposite of Ulysses in a lot of ways.
Yeah. That was like I had rebelled against what I had done before by making the Ulysses record in production, and then I swung the other way.
Yeah.
So that kind of is like how it. It's not on purpose that I do that, but it really makes sense. I mean, it's like once you've done something, you don't want to just keep doing it. You know, while you were doing that thing, you thought of something else you could be doing too, and you want to try that. And then, after you do that for a while, you think of something else, and then you kind of go the other direction, and I don't know.
Cool.
But yeah, there'll be another Ulysses record one day. Okay, I'm sorry, did I answer that question?
Yes, you did. The question is, is there going to be another Ulysses record?
Oh, yeah.
You see?
Yeah.
regarding New Magnetic Wonder, who is Joni? Is it a fictionalized character?
I guess there's a few... I guess the name Joni kind of just came to me while I was kind of just sounding out the song as I was writing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I won't name specific names, but like there are various aspects that are kind of like a few different people that I know, or like, you know, I mean, or myself, you know. And so, but yeah, there is no one person that is Joni, but there are a couple of people that are that sort of are. But it's not like there's no specific person that all that stuff happens.
Okay. Putting together recording projects for musicians, did it bring back any memories?
It was weird because I hadn't listened to those songs for so long. I mean, like, I haven't listened to them since they came out. I mean, they're songs that I totally, if you had asked me if I could sing the song to you, I would have no idea how to sing it. You know, I mean, like, there are songs that I completely have forgotten. And
yeah.
So, it was really cool because, yeah, it's cool to listen back over a lot of years, and that's like your friends, you know, that, like the songs. Bro, that's Chris McDuffie there, you know, singing or whatever. Like, it's like you hear these people that you've worked with and played with and stuff for years, and you remember that moment. Every time you listen to the song, you remember the moment that you recorded it. Or maybe the moment you first practiced it with the band or something, you know. And, like, a lot of the songs on that record are songs that, like, maybe just a couple of us recorded in some combination. And so then, too, they're these smaller sounding songs. Electronic Projects for Musicians is a good example of the fidelity switching, because there's a lot of songs that were recorded, like Onto Something was recorded to be on Punch's Noisemaker. It's not super hi-fi, but it's similar to that era, and the same as Shine In Your Mind. And, like, you know, you hear these great songs that were, like, really important. Like, at some point, you might have thought, oh, this is going to be the single for the record. Like, Shine In Your Mind, I can remember thinking that at some point, oh, this is going to be the single for the album. And, like, in the end, you know, things go a different way, and, like, you know, you don't finish it in time, and so you put it on the Japanese version. But it was going to be the single or something, you know. It's like, and so I can remember, yeah, it really does. It's cool to, like, remember sitting there recording these with my friends, and, like, also it's cool to hear the production style and what I was into at the time, and then at the same time, it's like, it reminds me of things, you know. Oh, yeah, I remember, you know, I really wanted to do that more in a song, and so now I've done it again, or something. So,
yeah,
all
the different avenues that you started going down, all the different, like, creative avenues, yeah.
Like, I would always, like, think, oh, I want, you know, I wish I could have a band that sounds like The Cars, but I would maybe do something that sounds like The Cars on only one song. It's like, why not do that some more, or something. I don't mean specifically The Cars. So it's like things like that, where it's like, you know, I felt at the time just to, like, to be able to even pull it off once felt like a huge accomplishment. So, like,
is there, like, a specific...
It's like this little notebook
specific song on the album that you think of? Like where you were listening to it and you were thinking, oh, that was the direction that I was going in, that I could go back down if I wanted?
I can hear a few songs that are like that when I listen to it. One of them is The Golden Flower, was a B-side to, actually, it was in the LP version that Spinart put out of Tone Soul Evolution. There was a double LP, except for that one of the two records was a 7-inch. so it had the regular album on a 12-inch, and then side C and D were a 7-inch. Mm-hmm. So it was Man, You Gotta Get Up and The Golden Flower.
Yeah.
Golden Flower is it's a direction that the Apples have touched on. You know, we touched on it from time to time through our records. Like maybe it's not similar to Seven Stars, but the Ulysses songs have a similar quality too, and She's Just Like Me. There's a sort of dangly kind of chord, I can't describe it, but there's certain combinations of almost, they're not dissonant chords, they're ninth chords and stuff. They're kind of Evolution and indie rock. But that just sounds really spacey, and we've always kind of touched on this direction of this sort of spacey sort of sound, and that song, The Golden Flower, I think is the perfect song for that, for what I've always kind of reached for in that style. There's a few Ulysses songs that are in that style that I really feel proud of too, and I feel there are parts of Seven Stars and She's Just Like Me is like that too. It's a sort of, I don't know how to describe it, but when I'm writing the songs, I'm thinking of it in a different way. They're not playing regular chords, they're kind of playing sort of funny chords high up on the neck, and with lots of open strings and stuff. But yeah, I would say The Golden Flower is definitely a song that's the direction that I really want to focus on at some point. And that we've touched on from time to time.
Yeah.
is the remix of the fan remix of Can You Feel It on the album? Because you had the contest.
The fan remix is on the digital version of the album. Not
oh, okay.
The version of it.
Yeah.
And
have you picked it yet?
I think that was what DFR had made the contest or something like that.
Right.
And so when you download the record online, it comes with that. It's like the bonus track for the record.
Did they pick a winner?
It's me picking the winner.
Oh, okay. So you haven't.
I've been listening through them, and it's kind of hard to pick a winner because there's ones that are really different and interesting. The same thing with the other contest. It's up to me and my bandmates to choose the winner. I mean, we could let Yep Rock do it or let somebody do it, but it's really our thing, you know. And it's cool. It's a really cool thing to see all this art and stuff. It's just it comes in fast, and there's always a lot going on, and then it's hard to decide. It's not like you just listen to everything once and this is clearly it.
was it your idea to put all these kind of uncompressed different tracks from Can You Feel It online so that everyone can have access to it?
Yeah. I wanted to put up a song. That would be something that people could mix. My idea was that it would be like something almost like on the website where there'd be a mixer. And I'm sure that other people have that, but the technical challenge of that was kind of difficult, I guess.
Yeah.
So
I think the website would crash pretty quickly, probably.
Yeah, I guess so. And so it turned into a contest instead.
That's awesome.
It's a little difficult, actually, because there's a lot of tracks on all of the songs, and I'm not sure that anybody knows exactly what all of the tracks are. the song was recorded, that song, for instance, was recorded in a lot of different places. I mean, the basic tracks for all of the songs were recorded at Bryce Goggin's studio in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Not recording studios, but all the overdubs were done in a lot of different places. And so I was afraid. I never actually downloaded all the songs and tried to remix it, having already mixed it laboriously once. I listened to a couple of. I just hope that all the stuff got on there. I hope that all the tracks were there, and that I hear all sorts of different stuff in the remixes that I didn't know that I didn't remember putting on the song. I'm sure some of them are user generated.
Someone wants to know when the Apple Songbook is coming out. Actually, a couple people want to know when the Songbook might be coming out.
I really want to get that done. I had intended to have it done this last year to sell on tour, but it'll have to be next year to sell on tour. I have been starting to get the lyrics together. People have put them up on a thread on the town hall.
Yeah.
And at some point, some people have posted some lyrics in response to a request. And I got all of those, and there's... once this Electronic Project record comes out, that will cover a lot of the Apple songs, and it'll be a good, I don't know, yeah. It's a difficult task to take all of my songs, since I've got the lyrics, and write the chord symbols on there. but I am actively working on it.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people want me to put up, a space on Optical Atlas for, tabs and things like that. And I've just been kind of putting that off, because I think it would be cool if people would just contribute, different tabs and chords as they figure it out, different songs, and then I can
I can see where tabs come in handy sometimes, because it'd be I'd really like to know how they play this, the solo to "And Your Bird Can Sing" or something.
Yeah.
So that's something you can figure out, but you're am I playing it in the right place, or whatever, I can see how people, why people would want that. That would be a really cool thing to do. It's a really difficult thing to do, and plus you're writing and recording and touring and doing all this other stuff, and plus you have other pursuits in life that are non-musical. I mean, not just me, but anybody to transcribe your song from guitar is so. You really have to sit down and focus on that.
Right.
On your old song instead of your new one. That's the hardest part about the songbook, is focusing on my old songs instead of new ones that I'm written. I've got the guitar in my hands. I want to write a new song, not try to remember the chord exactly, the fingering of the chord. But I am going to put the fingerings of the chord in the songbook.
So
at least that'll be in there.
So you are going to do it at some point.
The songbook,
there will be a song.
Going to happen sometime in the next year. And another problem is that new songs keep happening. Since I started the idea of the songbook, we recorded a whole new album and it had a lot of songs on it. So I have to but it's going to happen sometime in the next year for sure.
Okay.
Definitely.
Someone wants to know why you switched from analog tape to Pro Tools.
I still use tape too. Like our New Magnetic Wonder, all of the basic tracks for it were recorded onto a 16 track that Paul McCartney used to own. That he recorded McCartney 2 with. Except for it was an 8 track when he recorded McCartney 2, but they converted it into a 16 track. Or maybe it's a 24 track now. But anyway, like we recorded all the basic tracks and put them into Pro Tools. And actually, I don't use Pro Tools as much as I use other programs like Sonar and Vegas, personally, because I have a PC and I don't know, Pro Tools, it's a little too complicated for my needs. I do know how to use it, but you know. But the switch is from analog to digital. You know, I don't know, I guess I have been using some digital stuff for a long time. For Funtrick Noisemaker, we bounced a lot of the songs to stereo tracks on the DAT and then put it back onto the 8-track. And so that was like, having this tape machine that was like a perfect copy almost, it seemed really amazing at the time, the digital, the DAT machine. You know, during Total Control Evolution, we accidentally erased all of the tracks for like a verse and part of a chorus of Hillary's song from that album. When I say we, I mean the engineer who was working on it accidentally engaged all record on all 24 tracks. And so we had to make an emergency run like 2 hours away to this little studio in somewhere in Massachusetts.
And just re-record all the tracks?
Well, no, what we did was the guy had a Fairlight system. And Fairlight was the predecessor, the father of Pro Tools.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a different company, but like Fairlight was the. Have you heard of it before?
No.
You gotta look it up on the internet. It looks super old school. It looks like a really old, like PC from the 70s or something. But like I think they've had them since the late 70s or early 80s, since the beginning of digital recording technology. We had the guy used the Fairlight machine. He sampled all the tracks. He recorded them from another part of the song and punched them back in on the tape machine from his computer. He actually punched the track back in the gap, so that the gap that was actually on the recorded tape was filled with the right amount of music. I don't know if you understand that's very challenging to even punch something in cleanly. For mine to do it like with all 24 tracks so that it syncs up. And at that point, I was just like, oh my god, you know, this is incredible. So yeah, and then after that, I got a computer in my studio when we were recording Discover the World Inside the Moon and Wallpaper Reverie.
Mm-hmm.
Strawberry Fire was probably the first song that I heavily used the computer on. But at that point, I started taking the tracks that we would record. At that point, I had an 8-track and a 16-track. And instead of, and what I would do is I would take the tracks and I was wrong. Also, on Funtrick Noisemaker, on a couple of tracks, we actually used an ADAT machine that we synced up along with our 8-track. And so, like, because we needed more tracks, like Tidal Wave and Lucky Charm and maybe Glowworm were like 14 track songs or something. Like, we just had too many tracks, even with all of the submixing and stuff. So, like, we ran an ADAT machine at my friend's studio that I was working at. Kyle Jones was the guy that I had a studio with for some years before Jim McIntyre and I had a sound studio. I got a computer and I've used it. It's a really useful thing to have in the studio because you can record something on your 16 track or your 8 track or whatever, and then you can put it into the computer and edit it in the computer, but you still have a very, you know, it sounds a lot like your original recording.
Mm-hmm.
After it's edited on the computer, if you still want to use analog, which is what I've done on every record up until New Magnetic Wonder, like all of our albums up until New Magnetic Wonder were finished on tape. That is, when we were mixing it, it was off of a tape machine instead of off of a computer. Like, I would usually take the tracks off the computer and then dub them back onto the tape machine. But I don't mean like over the original one. I just mean I would, you know, make a new dump it back on a different piece of tape.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have an edited version of your analog recording, and it's been submixed once, which gives it kind of a warmer sound that I like personally. Because like you think about like analog recording as being like all warm and fuzzy and stuff, but really it's pretty damn hi-fi. And it's good to employ submixing and stuff on tape. Submixing means that you take some tracks and you transfer them to another track, and that's like it's a copy of your first track on tape, so it's like second generation. Like when you dub a cassette, it's a little bit worse quality, but like that quality is really nice when you're recording. And like our steam track tape machine, this Ampex, huge Ampex MM1200 tape machine I got for discovering the world inside the moon. Mm-hmm. One thing, that tape machine broke down all the time, which is why we recorded her Wallpaper Reverie. We did that on 8-track and the computer while the tape machine was broken on Discovery. So, like, whenever I couldn't work on my album, I would work on the EP, on the 8-track, but anyway, that's beside the point. So I guess it was a slow switch, because I've used the computer for a long time to some degree. Mm-hmm. The things that you can do on the computer that, you know, like, the whole Minders album, we did, and I did tons of tape splicing when we recorded the first Minders album. So, like, rearrange songs and take parts from this part and put it in that part. Same sort of stuff you do easily on the computer. You know, I've done it with tape, and it's really useful to be able to do that. It was great with tape, because you can do all sorts of great experimental things with the song, or totally change the structure of the song if you decide that's what you want. And so knowing that you can do that with tape, it's a lot of trouble with tape, and it's a little risky, and you always have to, there's just various drawbacks to it. You know, you can screw up your piece of tape,
mm-hmm.
for one thing, and then you've got a really bad sounding edit that you're trying to make. I used to doing those things on tape, and then started doing them on the computer, and I already had this kind of mystical view of the computer because of the Fairlight thing. You know, like, it seemed like, you know, like almost like unimaginably powerful for making music.
Yeah.
So, at the same time, I didn't really like the sound, and I didn't like it in theory. I like tape machines. I like old-fashioned stuff, you know. I always surrounded myself with all sorts of old-fashioned equipment. And, like, I like the sound of the tape running, and I like the waiting while you rewind it to hear the song, and, like, like that, you know. It was like a fetish.
Yeah.
Like, so I was reluctant, because, like, with the computer, you have something that, like, you can, like, every form of media that you could possibly want to look at or you know, take in, you can, like, process through a computer. And so it makes everything seem more samey. You know, like, what's the difference between a movie and a song and a book, you know, and your tax return? You know, what is the difference? It's all, you're using the same exact piece of equipment for all of them. So that always felt like, it felt like music should be special and, like, kind of sacred or something. And, like, and so I didn't like the idea of using the computer for that. I still don't like the idea of using the computer for doing math, because of the same reason. So I guess it's kind of an absurd thing. especially with that. But, like, the new record, we recorded it at Bryce's studio, and he uses Pro Tools. And at this point, I've worked so much with computers. I did the whole Marbles record on my laptop with no tape, and the Ulysses record we recorded on the laptop in mono. And it's really lo-fi, and it sounds really great, and I was pretty satisfied that was, you know, my tape machine sounded just, my computer sounded just as lo-fi as my 4-track. I do a lot of mastering and mixing and stuff like that, and there's things on the computer that you can't even imagine doing on the tape machine. Like, on the tape machine, you could take one chorus from the end of the song and replace the chorus at the beginning of the song with it. You know, like, you can do that. You can cut the tape and tape it together and do that. But, like, you can't take just the bass line from the last chorus and put it into the first chorus, you know, or something yeah. like that. And, like, that's an incredible thing to be able to do. That little thing that's special, that's, like, not reproducible, that you did by accident, you can, like, multiply it and put it all through your song. And then your whole song is not, it's not tighter, it's not more computerized, it's more accidental and human, because you can take the things that are special and reproduce them instead of, like, playing the song through kind of straight and then occasionally coming up with one of those things once in the song. You know, it's, like, a great thing to use. Like, somebody asked me about something about there's a flute on The Sun Is Out.
Uh-huh.
And, like, but, like, there's this flute line that Will Hart played on The Sun Is Out. Now, The Sun Is Out was a song that we recorded just totally messing around the mic. Basically, with every take, we had one mic set up. So with the first take, Bill and I each played acoustic guitar right up against the microphone, and Will played drums, just live into one microphone. And then, like, the second tape, I think we all, like, clapped our hands and sang the song all around the microphone. And then from that on, we would all do whatever. Like, so every additional take, somebody just had to pick up some sort of instrument or toy instrument and play it in the background. and also be singing the song and doing whatever, clapping your hands sometimes. There was no, we weren't, you know, besides the first couple of takes, we were just, you know, even one take when Bill and I were singing a harmony, Will was doing some other sort of little funny electronic sound or something.
hear more about the sun is
out. Will accidentally played this cool little thing on this like little tin flute, like a penny whistle flute.
Uh-huh.
And it was great. So when we were mixing the song, Bill and I took that little thing, and it was just accidental at one point, but Bill was like, I love this part. I love this little flute lick that Will does. So we took it and we put it every time in the song, the same place that he did it. But this is a song that we did in the least possible computerized. There was no click track. We were recording it all around the same mic. And there was, you know, this was, it was completely random. It was as random and fun and loose as you could possibly record. There's nothing sterile about it. And then we were able to take this cool little flute thing that would have gotten lost in the song and put it in every time. Except for maybe like one time we turned it around backwards and, you know, it's never exactly the same from time to time because there was no click track or anything. I mean, but we put it in approximately the same part of the song. And it was cool because it became, from being like a kind of an improvised thing, it became a musical element that we couldn't have used. That's a good example of why using the computer is awesome.
Yeah.
At the same time, it doesn't sound as good as tape, and that's why when we went to record like our big hi-fi record, we used the tape machine first before we put it on the computer.
Okay.
But the thing is that to the degree that it doesn't quite sound quite as great as tape on certain things, recording on the computer, like when I'm recording at home just for fun, I always record on the computer because it's like, it's so easy. It's so easy to set up. You have everything. You have your mixer, your effects. You have everything all in one box. Incredible. There's so few wires to plug in. I mean, oh my God, I hate plugging in the microphone to the mic tree and reaching around behind there and like screwing around with the patch bay or like, oh God, the cable came disconnected from the console. I have to crawl into the console. I hate like all of this stuff that has to do with like wires and stuff. It impedes your creative flow. You're like, there's the microphone. I just want to record this real quick. You don't want to have to like go crawl into the console or something. You know, it inevitably happens. And so like I love using the computer in that way because it's like so wire free and it's so easy to get everything. And you have all of your different little elements. You have like this great sounding multi-track program that sounds just as fucking good as my 16 track in like a laptop or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're trading this like this element of graininess and warmth, but you can get it easily by actually using a tape machine. Right? If you want that sound, you can actually use a tape machine before you put it on the computer. And you're trading using this, getting the sound, but you're trading it for so many things. Like, I just have to, like, travel around the country with a hard drive under my arm, and I can record anywhere I want to in any studio or any of my friends' houses. And that's what's so great is I don't have to drag a tape machine or a huge reel of tape, a bunch of huge reels of tape. Instead, I can go around with just, you know, sometimes, like, I did, sometimes it'll be, like, a song on a flash drive or something, you know? It's incredible. And another great thing about digital technology is that with analog, you have one copy of your tape. That's it. There's one copy. If it gets burnt up in a fire, if you drop it in a puddle, you know, somebody spills something on it, that piece of tape is damaged or destroyed, you know? But with digital, every time you make a copy with tape, the copy sounds worse than the original. And it's discernible. It's not like, we're not talking about, like, a minor hi-fi thing for only experts. We're talking about it really doesn't sound as good every single time you make a copy. With digital, you can make an infinite number of copies of the same thing, whether it's a painting or, a photograph or, like, whatever. It's like they're all, every copy is as good as the original. And that's incredible for, like, recording with music because you can send your original tracks to somebody and they can be recording on it in a different part of the world or something. I mean, these are obvious points. I know that these are the obvious points that are great about digital, but they're really great, you know? And so, like I said, you know, there's definitely a trade-off. And also, now, of course, there is the trade-off in the feel of analog, and that's not something you can argue against. It's a great feel, and I would, to any, you know, to a young kid that was starting to record, I would recommend start with tape. It's more fun. It's easier to use because it gives you a certain sound quality already. You don't have to fight for a good sound. You know, it gives you, it's like, that's part of what's great about tape is it just sounds good. You know, and so, like, but for being making albums and traveling and doing other things too, like TV, whatever, like song for Disney or commercials or whatever, for films or whatever, you know, to, like, have a computer is incredible. And it's so creative too. I mean, you can, like, take stuff and chop it up and move it all over the place, and you can take a kick drum hit and put on your tambourine track if you want to, you know, or whatever. Like, you can, like, if you wanted to, you could randomly cut up the entire multi-track thing and, like, swap them around just visually without ever listening to it. And, like, you can do, like, all of the strange stuff that you can't do with tape. And, and it's incredible in that way, but at the same time, like, to have started recording with tape, it also gives you a really good feel for how to do things. Like because I've edited on tape, I'm really good at editing on the computer. Because editing on tape is harder, and you have to be more precise.
Cool.
And so anyway, like I don't know, yeah.
No, you answered that thoroughly. You gave me so much material that I'm not going to ask any more questions.
I don't mean to be verbose.
No, that's perfect.
I'm really spacey, and I never think about this stuff, so it's like you're unlocking this gate of memories.
No, because that's perfect, because what you were talking
about.
I'd
never talk about recording with anybody, like maybe once every 5 years, so there's a lot of built-up thought about it.
Since Robert was talking about putting together the track Sun Is Out, let's listen to that to wrap up this episode of the Optical Atlas Show. Sun Is Out is off New Magnetic Wonder, last year's Apples and Stereo record. This year's Apples and Stereo record is Electronic Projects for Musicians, which is available everywhere right now. So go out and get it. I'll see you next time on the Optical Atlas Show.
Street address, you'll take a ride downtown.